programs you tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Thevenier, bringing you an hour of mystery. Later on the program, Mystery House with the Death House Blues from 1945. But right now, one of the most popular detective shows on radio. During its golden age, it's The Adventures of Sam Spade. Part of CBS Radio's Sunday night lineup at 8 o'clock, more than 10 million people tuned into this episode called The Apple of Eve Caper, heard on June 19, 1949.
Of office supplies.
Don't give it another thought, Eph. This was going to be a short report.
Short and sweet, Sam?
Hardly, Angel. In fact, barely.
Well, Sam, if you had asked me, I could have told you. That girl was merely trying to stir up a tempest in her boyfriend's teapot.
Again?
It was perfectly observant to me, Sam, that she had sour grapes written all over her.
Sour apples, Effie, but you're warm, and that's why I'm so fond of you.
Oh, thank you, Sam. I'm glad I could be of help, though I must confess the apples are over my head.
Well, don't feel bad about it. That's how Newton discovered the law of gravity. Stay where you are. I'll be right down to dictate my report on the Apple of Eve caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with The Adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair.
Oh, Sam. Come right in.
Sure. Why are you so nervous?
Oh, nothing, really. I'm just glad to see you, dear.
Oh, I'm glad to see
That's
you.
That's all.
Come on, out with it. What are you hiding behind your back?
Well, it's a surprise, Sam. So you just run along into your office, and I'll be right with you.
Surprise, huh? Let me think. Father's Day?
No, surely not.
Oh, no, Sam, no. It's just as regards our shortage of office supplies. I do hope you'll be able to mint your words.
What's all that junk you got stuffed in between the pages of your notebook?
Where? Oh, well, Sam, you see, improvisation is a child of necessity. So, to stretch our supplies, I just cut up some old strips of waste paper in case we run out of the genuine.
Well, very ingenious. Shall we commence?
Yes, but not too many corrections, Sam. I'm afraid this eyebrow pencil might not last.
Well, don't bear down on it. Where was I?
No place, Sam.
Date?
I already have that, Sam.
Oh, this one goes to... Hey.
Yes, Sam?
The calendar. Where is it?
Calendar? Which calendar, Sam?
You know perfectly well which calendar. It's been hanging there on the wall for 3 years. The one from Harold's Club in Reno.
Oh, that old calendar. It was out of date anyway, Sam.
That calendar was timeless.
It was not, Sam. It was vulgar.
That's a lie. I met the girl who posed for it.
In more modest circumstances, I hope.
Put it back.
Now, Sam, don't.
Eph, what did you do with that calendar?
You mustn't excite yourself, Sam.
Let me see that notebook.
Yes, Sam.
Uh-huh. Old waste paper, indeed. An art treasure mutilated, and for what? To serve your own base purposes. Just because you were too absent-minded to order a few office supplies.
But I frequently alluded to our dwindling resources, Sam. But no, you were too proud.
Take these and put them in a safe place. You can put it back together with scotch tape on your own time.
Oh, we're out of scotch tape, Sam.
We've got a first aid kit, haven't we?
We used to.
Use the adhesive. Date. June 19, 1949. I won't soon forget that. Two, Detective Lieutenant Dundee, Homicide Detail, San Francisco Police, from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the Apple of Eve caper. Dear Dundee. The start of it was yesterday when Eve Adams first walked into my office. She was angry and she was terribly, terribly hurt. In fact, she had a shiner, a swollen jaw, and somebody had bitten her on the arm.
And furthermore, she had the audacity to suggest that there was something shady between I and Mr. Hagen when it is an item of public information that her and Gorse Hagen was washed up practically before they started. And I might just add in passing...
Just a minute, Miss Adams. You say this girl came to your apartment in a jealous rage and attacked you without provocation.
None whatsoever. I never opened my trap to her except to remind her that it would have been a blessing to the human race if her old man had never met her old lady. And if she thought those three layers of pancake on her puss could fool a blind man as to her true age, And seeing as what her mouth was, she should never open it for fear of what might come out.
I see. And a girl's name?
Down at that flea bag where she works, she's billed as Dream of Love. And is she ever a nightmare?
Dream of Love. That's D-R-E-A-M-A?
It says there. But I do not intend to take this episode lying down on my chin, Mr. Spade. Why, if it had not been for the timely arrival of my concierge, that cheap mare would have brained me with my own gin bottle.
I see. Landlady broke it up. And you say she threatened to return with a gun and blast you if you continued seeing Mr. Hagen.
That is a fact. And she is just cheap enough to try some low trick like that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you want me to do, Miss Adams?
I want you should pay a formal call on that dame and tell her that upon the very next occasion of any violence or threats thereof out of her, I'm going to yell cop. In fact, Mr. Spade, I am placing my life and limbs in your hands, and if you are anything of what you're cracked up to be, you will have no difficulty in giving that creepy crow the bum's rush straight out of my life.
Pardon me, Miss Adams. My secretary seems to be calling me.
Out of my way. I know who's in there, and I'm going in.
Out of my way.
Mrs. Spade, it's her. Keep her off.
You should have hired the 4th Marines, dearie.
Now, ladies. Ladies, please. Break it up.
I'll show you who to get tough with.
Let
go of me, Shamus, or I'll let you have it.
Now, ladies, please. Now, let's talk this over calmly and sensibly.
Okay, you asked for it.
Now, ladies.
Oh.
Please. It's awful.
Water, Sam.
Oh. Where'd they go?
Well, they chased each other down the hall. I thought you'd gone out.
I did. What did she hit me with?
Well, she took a sap out of her purse and let fly before I could prevent it.
Yeah.
But you were still on your feet when you told me to close the door.
Fine thing. Help me up.
Yes, Sam.
Easy, easy.
Oh, when I think of you lying in here unconscious all that time while I went out to lunch.
What?
If anything had happened to you, I'd never forgive myself.
You call this nothing?
Oh, you poor, dear, brave boy. Now, you just sit down and relax. Now, the ambulance would be here any minute.
Ambulance? Don't you know these things cost money?
Well, I'm sorry, Sam. I lost my head. When I saw you lying there all of a heap,
Forget it. What's that gadget there on the floor?
Oh, it's lipstick. Must have dropped out of her purse when she opened it for the sap.
Huh. Apple of Eve.
It's a ghost color, Sam.
Apple of Eve. Unique garage. Harry speaking.
Spade, this is Dream of Love.
Keep your distance. Look, you left your lipstick, but don't bother to come after it. I'll mail it to you.
What kind is it?
Apple of Eve.
Sorry, I've never used it.
Good, then I won't give you another thought.
Oh, but you got to. She's dead.
Eve Adams?
Yeah. She jumped into a taxi in front of your building. I went straight after her. But I got caught in traffic where they're tearing up Market Street.
That could be anywhere between the Embarcadero and Twin Peaks. Fine alibi. What comes next?
Well, I'm at her apartment now, and she's dead.
Sam!
Hold on. Yeah, Effie?
There's your ambulance. Shall I send him away? What shall I do
with
him?
Well, it's $10 now anyhow. I'll use it for a taxi. Hello, Miss Love?
Yeah?
Stay there and don't touch a thing. I'll be right over. Dreamer hadn't waited, if that was really where she'd called me from. Eve Adams was on the bedroom floor in front of a dressing table. There was broken glass all over the floor. The place reeked of perfume. The front of her negligee was splashed with red. I looked for the wound, but I didn't find any. Then I looked at her hands. All the nails on her left hand and two on the right were the same color as the stain on her clothing. Evidently, she'd been seated at the dressing table putting on nail polish when the murderer entered the room. The back of her head had been creased by the well-known blunt instrument, such as a heavy sap. I felt the bumps on my head and looked at the overturned nail polish bottle on the dressing table. It was called Apple of Eve.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
Second time around the murder apartment, I noticed something I hadn't caught the first time. Some smears of Apple of Eve nail polish that didn't show very distinctly against the rust-colored carpeting, but left a clear trail across the kitchen linoleum. When I opened the back door, I smelled burning cloth. There was an incinerator just outside, and from it I fished a man's shirt, partially burned. The initials in the pocket were still intact, so were the red stains under them. The initials were G.H. The stains were, you guessed it, Lieutenant Dear, Apple of Eve.
Yeah?
I'm looking for Miss Dreamer Love. Is she home?
No, she isn't.
Thanks. I'll come in and
wait. Hey, wait a minute. Okay, you're in. What do you want with her?
She's in a little trouble.
You a cop?
When do you expect her back?
I don't know. What's this trouble?
She threatened to kill a woman, and now she's dead.
Who?
A girl named Eve Adams.
Why would she want to kill Evie?
The way I got it, they were locking horns over a guy named Gorse Hagen. You know him?
Yeah, and I wish I didn't.
Who is he?
He used to run a gambling ship down at Malibu till the law turned it into a bait barge. Now he calls himself a yachtsman. But if you're trying to connect him up with my sister, it's a bad connection. She hasn't seen him in years.
His idea or hers?
Hers and mine.
Then what was the beef? And who are you?
I'm her brother. Eddie's my name. And why would there be any beef between those two? Evie was my sister's best friend, and she was engaged to me.
Then this news must be quite a shock to you. You're taking it like a little soldier.
She was asking for it. I warned her. I begged her to leave town with me. But no, she couldn't sneak off like that without letting Gorse know the score. I told her he'd kill her before he'd let her go.
Mm-hmm. Do you live here, Eddie?
Yeah, what of it?
Where do you keep your shoes?
In a closet, kidder. Where do you keep yours? Under the bed?
Which closet? In here?
Hey, wait a minute,
get
you.
Get your hands off of me.
Let me see your warrant. Then better be good or you're going out of here on your head.
Take your hands off me, Eddie.
Let's see that warrant.
All right, I got a warrant, Eddie. Here. I didn't find what I was looking for, a pair of crepe-soled shoes with traces of Apple of Eve nail polish on them, but in one of his coat pockets, I found a sales slip from a department store cosmetics counter. There were several items, but the one that interested me said, one lipstick nail polish set, Apple of Eve. About then, I smelled brandy, and a voice behind me said,
what happened to the kid?
Huh? Oh, he asked for my warrant.
Well, when you come to see me, I'll know better.
Your name is Gorse Hagen. I'm headed for your place right now.
What are you looking for?
A pair of shoes with crepe soles.
What do you want with my deck shoes?
I thought maybe they'd match up with this piece of a shirt with your initials on it.
Give me that.
That's a fact.
Where'd you get that?
In the incinerator at Eve Adams' place.
Well, that don't prove anything. Lots of people got the same initials. Have you talked to, George Howard?
He's alibied. He's out of town.
That proves it's a frame. I don't know any George Howard.
I thought so.
Okay, let's cut out the monkey business. Give it to me.
It's evidence.
Give it to me!
All right, I'll give it to you. I did. He gave it right back to me. I was only losing on points until I tripped over poor old Eddie and lost my balance. That's when he gave me the coup de grace.
Ew!
I wasn't quite unconscious, but somehow I just didn't feel like getting up. And when the apartment door opened, I opened my good eye just wide enough to see Dreamer Love walk in.
Gorse, what are you doing here?
I come to help you, Dreamer.
I don't need any help from you, Gorse. I told you that 3 years ago.
Did you kill her?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You killed Eve Adams. Why?
You're wrong, Gorse. I haven't seen Evie in ages.
Why did you kill her?
All right, I did it.
Yeah? Why?
I was jealous. Seeing the two of you together after all we'd been to each other. Go on, laugh at me. I committed murder out of love for you. It's very funny, isn't it?
I'm very fond of you, Dreamer. My poor little Dreamer Love. I'd give you anything, honey. The shirt from my back. Here. Here's a piece of it on the count.
Where'd you...
I see you're impressed. Me too. Come on, we'll go someplace where we can be alone and talk things over.
Oh, no, Gorse, please. I can explain everything.
You can explain in the car on the way down to the boat. Come on.
You're hurting me. Oh!
No!
Come on, lock that door. Stupid me, I staggered to my feet and stumbled over to the door. I reached it just as Hagen's car pulled away from the curb. By the time I found a taxi, they were at least halfway to wherever they were going. I didn't know whether the boat he had mentioned was tied up at the Embarcadero, anchored in the marina, moored at Sausalito, or becalmed in Oakland. But there was a seafaring man in our town who knew about such things. My port of call was the Seahorse Bar and Grill just off ahead of Pier 16, or is it the Foot? Captain Pasalti?
P is silent, son, as in Prasad.
My mistake.
Salty by name, and salty by nature. Only one salty thing I can't abide. Saltwater taffy. My teeth, you know. Here, have a lifesaver.
Well, thank you, sir. You're very generous.
No, it ain't money, matey, but it's straight from the mint.
That joke wasn't.
What's up, Sonny? You in the hole again? You catch my drift?
Yeah. What do you know about a yachtsman named Gorse Hagen?
Oh, nicely put, matey. If there's anything lower than a yachtsman, he's it.
Mm-hmm. Where does he keep his boat?
Well, now, she's still afloat. She'd be dragging her hook somewhere off Sausalito. Now, she's a converted PT, you know, because of the Sea Queen.
Mm-hmm.
She had her bottom planks ripped out in the Battle of the Coral Sea, and they patched her up with plywood. Well, she's got two diesels, she has, and twin screws, 2-to-1 reduction gear.
Yeah, yeah. What's the quickest way of getting out to her?
Well, now, there's not much craft for charter here about this time of night, you know. There's that Novak fella, but just at present he's sleeping one arm.
Figures.
Might not be worth your while anyways.
Why not?
Well, Hagen stopped by here 20 minutes ago looking for his engineer. Said he was casting off on-tide engineer or no engineer.
And what about your boat?
My boat? Well, now, matey, on a plotted course, she'll stand up to any double-ender Monterey dory in the class.
Yeah.
Without a head sea, that is. Then on the other hand, you put her in a bottom race. And buck and a quarter swell.
Yeah, right? How much? How much?
$5 an hour. And that's with you, man, in the bilge pumps.
Okay, let's go.
This, here Hagen fella now. You on to the trim of his sails?
Sails? On a PT boat?
Oh, not the boat, Sonny. The man. Cut of his jib.
No, I didn't notice that, but he was wearing crepe-soled shoes.
I'll tell you about this Hagen, matey. Fella once tried to board him. Customs officer, no less. What's up? Picked him up 4 days later in a gill net with a fish gaff stowed clean through his neck. Here, have another lifesaver. You may need it.
After he lashed me to my station at the bilge pump, Captain Fasaldi got his double-ender Monterey dory and a plotted course to Sausalito, he hoped, and we plunged recklessly into the fog. As nearly as I could catch his drift, there was a 50-50 chance that A, Hagen had found his engineer and would be halfway to the Farallone Islands before we could make it past Alcatraz if we stayed afloat that long, or B, that he hadn't found his engineer and might be having trouble starting up those two diesels with the twin screws and the 2-to-1 reduction gears, whatever they are.
Matey.
Which one?
Oh, about 5 points to port. The blue one with the high freeboard.
Uh-huh.
You get up on the foredeck, matey. The ladder's round on the landing side. I'll swing round and put you on it.
Hey! Anybody home?
He's likely below, nursing them diesels. You've got to rear back and holler, matey, like this.
Ahoy, the Sea Queen!
I like that.
I know there is them.
Who are you? Captain Salty, board the Ledger Crabtree. My supercargo requests permission to board, sir. Who is he?
Spade, I want to talk to you, Hagen. Captain Salty.
Lop down, you little clumsy lover. Hit the scuppers.
Where'd he get you?
Don't write the note. Hurts a midships, huh?
Here. How do you run this thing? I got to get you to shore.
That throttle. There's your forward gear.
Uh-huh.
Look, don't pull her back all the way. She'll die. The vacuum tank.
You lie still. What are you looking for?
Jump a pocket. Lifesaver. In case you need it. I don't know more. Best winds on your after quarter, matey. Remember
that. Okay, take it easy, Captain.
Keep her balanced. Don't let your jib ruffle. Keep her on course, matey. Keep...
Hey, Captain. Captain Salty. Sour racket. I crawled over the rail and tried to make out Hagen's silhouette on the other boat. I could just barely make out the shape of the hull against the faint glow of light from the Sausalito shore. We drifted a few yards astern of Hagen's boat, but not out of rifle range. I wondered why, if he could see us well enough to drop Captain Salty, he'd let it go at that. And I got it. He was listening. Somebody was pulling out from shore in a rowboat. I didn't waste any more time listening. I dug into Captain Salty's jumper pocket, fished out a waterproof pouch. I took his seaman's papers out of it. He didn't need them anymore. Wrapped it around my gun. Then I took off some clothes and eased myself over the side. I didn't swim for speed, but for distance. Stopping now and then to make sure the man in the boat was still covering for me. Felt my way around the hull till I found the anchor rope. Just as I grabbed it, I heard him rest his oars.
Hagen, who's that? Eddie Love. What do you want? I've come after my sister.
Go on home, Eddie. She's sailing with me. That's the way she wants it.
You're lying.
Wait a second. Come on out there, Dreamer.
What's happened?
Your brother's down there in the boat. Talk to him.
Well, what am I going
to... Talk to him.
All right. Eddie.
What's he done to you, sis?
I'm all right, Eddie. Everything's all right. Gorse and I have decided... Gone home, Eddie.
He's lying to you. He knows you framed him. If you sail out with him, you won't come back.
No, Eddie.
I'm coming aboard.
Eddie, no. Gorse, please. No, Eddie.
Drop it, Hagen.
No.
Drop the rifle.
I'll drop you, you lousy, shameless.
Sam, did he hurt you?
No, I've been kicked in the stomach before. It takes a woman to kick you in the teeth.
I'm sorry.
I don't care what you did. What burns me up, you didn't do it right. I hate a bungler, especially a female bungler.
I'm a bungler. You're the one. It would have worked if you hadn't gone poking in the incinerator. I should have called the police. They'd have known what to do with evidence like that. They've been wanting to get something on Gorse ever since repeal.
Listen, Angel, any flatfoot could have seen through that setup. Eve Adams was sitting in front of a mirror when she was maced. She saw the murderer enter the room. She got it in the back of her head. That means she trusted whoever walked up behind her. That also means the evidence of a struggle was faked.
Put the nail polish on Gorse's shirt.
You put that nail polish on her fingers after she was dead, laid that trail to the incinerator with a pair of Gorse's shoes where any flatfoot was supposed to think he'd try to destroy the incriminating shirt. But the dumbest thing you did was lying to me about that matching lipstick you dropped in my office. That made you look guiltier than anybody, because anybody could have planted that fake evidence.
I didn't kill her. I'm not a murderer.
Your brother might have got off easy. Crime of passion.
Oh, please, please don't say that. I can't bear the thought that after everything I did, it's all come to nothing.
Here. Have a lifesaver. You may need it. Period. And a report.
Oh, Sam. Poor Captain Fasolti.
P is silent. F is in Passam. Go type that up.
All right, Sam.
Last one in the package.
And now, listen to this. If you want the well-groomed look that helps out, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So, if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too.
What stopped you?
The last page of my notebook owing to our shortage of supplies, Sam. But in a way, I'm glad. Because I didn't have to go through it again. I mean, poor Captain Basaldi.
F, please. Please, now, honest, I'll buy you a new notebook, a nice fat one. Would you like that?
Oh, yes, Sam. There's always something so final about final pages of things. When I think of all the risks you take...
To say nothing of my clients. I think I'll put a new sign on the door. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Oh, but I haven't, Sam. Where there's a will, there's a wisp.
There's a what?
A wisp, Sam. Small amount.
Which reminds me, there's a couple of fingers left. Join me, just a wisp?
Oh, no, Sam. One of us has got to have a clear head.
Well, it'll be me.
All the best. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
Thank you. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. Howard Duff can now be seen starring with Yvonne DiCarlo in Universal International's Technicolor production of Calamity Jane and Sam Bass. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin, with score composed by Rene and Pierre Garrigan. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 19, 1949 on CBS. The program would switch networks in 1950 on NBC and gain about a million listeners a week. You're listening to an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. And now on to the Mutual Broadcasting System show, Mystery House, from October 7, 1945. A great locked room mystery, next called Death House Blues.
Mystery House. Mystery House, that strange publishing firm owned by Dan and Barbara Glenn, where each new novel is acted out by the Mystery House staff before it is accepted for publication. Mystery House.
You said this story we're doing tonight, Death House Blues, was very unusual, Barbie. In what way?
Well, for one thing, Dan, you never see or hear the hero of the story. And yet he's very definitely the hero.
You don't say. Anything else?
Yes. The whole story takes place in one room, the governor's office.
Well, I'll be darned.
It's an unusual story in other ways, too.
Well, how does it start?
You mean you don't know how it starts, Mr. Glenn?
Why, of course not. I haven't read the script.
Oh, but surely you know how it starts. It starts the same way all good mystery shows start.
How's that?
Why, with a brief message from our sponsor.
Okay, boys and girls, you all have your parts. Places, everybody. Set the scene, Tom.
Death House Blues. Tonight's story opens in the governor's office in the state capital of a distant state. Governor Burris is sitting at his desk as the dynamic Terry Rogan, criminal lawyer, speaks. The governor doesn't seem to like what he hears and says so.
Great Scott, Rogan. You act as if sending this client of yours, this Eddie Banks, to the chair was a personal pleasure to me.
Well, I think it is, Governor. You feel it's a popular thing to do. You think you'll get votes by letting this kid be killed for a murder he didn't commit.
Oh, please now, Rogan. I'm not quite that bad. Just because you and I belong to different political parties...
It's politics that keeps you from granting executive clemency, Burris. And you know it. The word has come to you that Eddie Banks is supposed to fry.
Listen, Rogan, if you're insinuating that anybody tells me how to run my office...
Well, take the stuffing out of your shirt, Governor. It's too late for me to be polite. The kid's supposed to go to the chair in an hour.
I've been fair and patient with you, Rogan. I've granted two stays of execution. I've examined all the evidence thoroughly.
You've played to the grandstand all through the appeal, and you know it. You've granted two stays because you knew it would keep the case alive in the papers and keep you in the spotlight.
Now, let's not be nasty about this, Rogan. That isn't a sporting thing to say, and you know it.
Sporting? You can talk about being sporting when a man's life's about to be taken. You're darned right I'm not sporting. As his lawyer, I'll hit with anything I have. If I could put you in that chair in his place, I'd do it.
I'm sorry, Rogan. Honestly, I am. I rather liked your client the time I talked to him. Of course, his background isn't conducive to belief in his integrity, and I couldn't blame him for lying anyways when his own neck...
He isn't lying, Burris.
Try to get that through your head, will you? Look, the kid hasn't got a dime. I've been working day and night for the past 2 weeks trying to break this thing. Why do you think I'm doing it?
A very touching speech, Rogan. I think you're doing it because you have political aspirations and you saw a good chance for a tangle with me. You as the champion of the oppressed, the fighter for the underdog.
Oh, that's rotten and you know it. Eddie Banks was convicted on circumstantial evidence. He didn't...
You
have...
like screaming about circumstantial evidence, don't you? Well, there's nothing whatsoever wrong with circumstantial evidence. For some reason, there's a popular belief that circumstantial evidence is bad. When circumstances combine to indicate that a man is a killer, he usually is. The court... Comstock, I wish you wouldn't walk in here unannounced like that. After all, this is the governor's office.
Oh, stow it, Burris. I knew you and you were running for alderman. I've just been up to the big house.
You saw Eddie Banks, Comstock?
Yeah. He's taking it big. Got a last-hour story from him. Your boy's hard as nails, Burris.
What do you want here, Comstock?
Why, I figured there'd be another last-minute stay. Maybe.
Then you figured wrong. Eddie Banks was tried by a competent jury and... I'd be tampering with justice if
Oh, nuts. You don't need to make a speech for me, Burris. And if you think I'd quote a line like that, you're crazy. Some of our readers might have sensitive stomachs.
Now, see here, Comstock. You presume on your position as a reporter. What do you want here?
Why, I've got a photographer outside. I thought maybe you boys could give me a good pose with Rogan banging his fist on the august desk, clash of legal minds, you know.
Now, listen.
Alan?
I don't know.
You go straight...
I suppose we might as well humor the press. Eh, Rogan?
No, you go straight... Look, Burris, I've told you this is no cheap political trick with me. I'm arguing for this kid's life. He didn't kill that dirty rat, Vickford, and you know it just as well as I do.
Well, the evidence, Rogan...
Somebody framed Eddie. Framed him with phony evidence that doesn't even hold together.
The cry of the man who gets caught from time immemorial. I was framed.
Expecting anything that might make a good human interest sidelight, Governor?
Why, Eddie Banks' sweetheart is supposed to see me at the 11:30. Last-minute request.
She's waiting outside now. But who's the dirty little guy with her?
What? Madeline's out there? Why didn't you say so?
I thought you knew.
Send her in.
Okay.
There's a true Blue Lou for you, that girl. The way she's stuck by Eddie is...
Is what?
Well, it's proof that Banks is innocent. No girl would be as loyal as that unless she actually believed that he would... Oh, hello, Madeline.
Hi, Rogan. I brought along a character.
It's a little late for new evidence, Madeline.
I know. This is Packy Lasker, Rogan.
Hi.
He has some bearing on the case, has he?
Sure. Just like a lot of other people have had, if you'd believe him.
I'll listen to his story.
Go ahead, Packy.
The night Bickford was killed, I'm standing in the mob in front of the club mirror door, see?
Yeah, well, what of it?
I see a guy I later learned is Eddie Banks coming out with a dame. This dame, who brung me here tonight?
Well, that was established in the trial that Eddie had taken Madeline to the club. There was never any argument about that. And he had a fight with Bickford on the dance floor over Madeline.
Hold still, Rogan. This little guy's got some new stuff, whether you think it's important or not.
All right. Go ahead.
Banks and his dame, they kind of edged their way into the crowd. Banks is dressed in soup and fish, see? And I bump into him a little hard.
When I bump
into him, my hand brushes against his side, and he ain't carrying any gun when he left the club mirror door.
How do you know?
I'd stake my professional reputation on it.
Your what?
Packy's a professional pickpocket, Rogan.
If I gotta be blunt about it, I was frisking the guy. And there's no rat. That's for sure.
I'm sorry, Miss Martin. It isn't important testimony for one
Not
thing.
Not important, Governor. They never found a murder weapon. Bickford was shot, and they said it was Eddie who shot him, but they never found the gun. Bickford followed Eddie and me home. He was shot after Eddie dropped me at my apartment. Eddie wouldn't have had time to pick up a gun anywhere.
This man, though, he couldn't possibly know whether or not Eddie Banks had a gun on his person.
No? Have a look at this.
Yeah? What is it?
It's Eddie's wallet. Packy got it in the crowd.
Rather neat trick. I'm afraid it won't help us any.
But it shows definitely, if they'll believe Packy, that Eddie couldn't have killed Bickford.
The testimony of an admitted pickpocket hardly excites me, Miss Martin.
See, Miss Martin, it's like I told you. I wouldn't have done any good. Just got myself into trouble by getting spotted by cops in the courtroom.
I suppose you left the money in this wallet.
A great lift, that was. $5 in it.
But that's not true, Packy.
Honest. $5.
When Eddie and I were in the cab going to the club, he said to me, "How would you like to take a look at real dough?" And he pulled out his wallet and showed me $5,000.
Oh, look, lady, I never got no $5,000.
I believe you, Packy. And I'm pretty sure I know who got it.
Who?
Bickford. He was the guy who received the dough for the crooked politician. That fight between Eddie and Bickford was a fake. It gave them a chance to wrestle around just long enough for Eddie to drop the $5,000 in Bickford's pocket. Eddie was paying off.
If such a thing were true, which seems questionable, I mean, if there is a political payoff, why didn't Eddie Banks say something about it when he had his day in court?
I don't know. But I'm going to find out.
Yes, how?
Hello, Warden? This is Madeline Martin at the governor's office. It's terribly important for me to talk to Eddie Banks right now. Oh, thank you. Have him call me right back. Goodbye.
This is a trick of yours, Rogan.
Oh, I didn't even know about it. I never heard of this pickpocket before.
My name's Packy Lasker, Mr. Rogan. You don't need to keep calling me a pickpocket.
The credibility of Eddie Banks' witnesses have been bad all through this thing.
Well, what do you expect? Eddie was working for Spike Polto. Spike owned gambling joints all over the country. Who do you expect Eddie's witnesses to be except the people who know him?
My dear, how did an attractive young lady like you ever become acquainted in a person like Banks?
I'm not so high class myself. Eddie's a swell guy, and he didn't like the idea of my waiting tables in a gambling joint. He talked me into getting a job for less money slinging hash in a restaurant. And he was going to stick on with Polto until we had enough money to get married.
Excuse me.
That's for me. I'll get it. Hello? Eddie? Darling, you've got to tell me the truth. This is terribly important. Did you really have a fight with Victor that night, or were you paying him off some payoff money for Polto? What? $5,000. I knew it. But why? Why didn't you say so? What? Oh. No, I'm afraid I don't understand. Oh. Well, there's no time to discuss it, dear. I'll call you later. Goodbye.
Well?
Eddie says he gave Bickford $5,000 and the fight was all a phony.
The fight was supposed to be over you, wasn't it, Miss Martin?
I don't know what it was supposed to be over. The prosecuting attorney said Eddie was jealous of me, but that wasn't so. That scuffle was Eddie's way of slipping Bickford the $5,000 payoff right out in public.
The place for that to have come out was at the trial. Why didn't he talk about it there?
He says Rogan told him not to mention it.
What? You mean to say that Rogan would deliberately perjure a client? You admit that you told him not to mention it, Rogan?
I didn't ask him about it in court. Neither did the prosecuting attorney.
The prosecuting attorney had no knowledge of what happened. He couldn't ask. But you deliberately withheld evidence.
No, don't look so pious. You can't deliberately run evidence into a case that makes your client look bad.
Look bad?
If I'd have asked Eddie Banks about that payoff in court, he'd have been in the electric chair by now.
Are you insinuating that our courts aren't honest?
I'm insinuating that Bickford was playing with the party in power. We'd started talking about payoff money. They'd have framed us with everything in the book. Besides, the payoff just gave another motive they could throw against Eddie Banks.
But that's not so. What motive?
Well, you had testified that Eddie was trying to get enough money to marry you. He knew that Bickford had $5,000 on him. Knew it because he'd given it to him.
But so must a lot of other people, bad people. Polto gave Eddie the money to give to Bickford. Polto could have told some of his hoodlums about it.
Look, Madeline, I appreciate that you're desperate. So am I. But the story about the payoff money doesn't help a bit. Now, really, it doesn't. I think the governor will agree with me that it's better left out of the picture. How about that, Governor?
If you're insinuating that any bribe money gets to me, I resent it, Rogan. And the Bar Association's going to hear about your counseling a defendant to perjure himself.
I did no such thing. I merely advised him not to talk about things that would get him into trouble. Watch yourself. What are you...
Pardon me, mister. Sorry I bumped you. Here you are, lady. Is this what you wanted?
Why, you stole my wallet right out of my pocket.
Yeah.
Well, give it to me. You have no right to...
Maybe I'm beginning to see a few things, Rogan. This is kind of interesting.
What is it?
Polto's private phone number. By any chance, are you working for Polto too, Rogan? You and Eddie both? That'd make everything that's happened kind of interesting, wouldn't it?
Comstock, you back again? I do wish you'd knocked before.
I don't have to knock when I have news like this, Ferris. It'll knock you right off of your seat. And I guess you might as well call the big house and tell them to get Eddie Banks off the electric chair. You know, they're due to turn it on in 25 minutes.
What is this big news you're talking about, Comstock?
They just found Spike Polto with a knife through his heart.
What?
Yeah. And a note on his chest that said, "This is for Eddie Banks, a right guy who got a wrong rap."
Now, Act Two of Death House Blues. The scene is still the governor's office, and the clock says 20 minutes till midnight. Fred Comstock, the reporter, is questioning Rogan, the lawyer for Eddie Banks.
So, it was because you were looking out for Eddie Banks that you didn't bring the payoff money into the trial, huh? And Madeline finds you were working for Spike Polto. That's very funny.
I don't like the way you say that, Comstock. Sure, Polto hired me to defend Eddie Banks. Eddie was one of his boys.
You've been spouting about how Eddie didn't have a dime and that this was a labor of love as far as you were concerned. Why, you practically had me in tears.
Look, what difference does it make whether I get paid or not? The important thing is to get the kid off. Now, he didn't kill Bickford. The looks of things now, one of Polto's boys did it, and Polto picked Eddie for the fall guy.
I like your methods of operation less and less, Rogan. I was listening to you with some little favor. But now, you're just a gangster lawyer. A lawyer who covers up evidence not to defend his client, but to defend the man who's paying the bill.
What you think of me doesn't make much difference, Burris. As long as the kid gets to live. And you better start making up your mind fast, because there's only about 15 minutes left.
You can't let them kill Eddie. Rogan's been working for Polto, not for Eddie. He's been letting Eddie take the rap.
That phrase, take the rap, Miss Martin. Wasn't there something like that in the note that Comstock says the police found on Polto's body?
What do you mean?
You came up here only a short time ago. You had a criminal with you.
Me? I never hurt anybody in my life.
I'm wondering if you might not have visited Polto before you came here.
Are you trying to say that I killed Polto?
Somebody killed him. As soon as this electrocution is over, I'm going to ask the police to check your movements this evening prior to your coming here.
Governor, why should I kill Polto?
You fancied this gangster Polto was responsible for your sweetheart's being in the death house. You thought perhaps that his murder, together with the note, would throw suspicion on somebody else, would make it look like somebody knew that Eddie Banks was innocent. That wrong rap phrase. It's not too difficult a picture to grasp.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Governor. It's just 12 minutes till they'll strap Eddie into the electric chair. There's plenty of time to talk about Polto's murder later.
I'm talking about it right now because I think it applies to the case under discussion. My guess is that Polto's murder was a daring effort on somebody's part to confuse and distract me.
You think I killed somebody just to get you mixed up? I don't want you mixed up. I want you to have one thing clear, that Eddie didn't murder Bickford.
But the note on Polto's chest...
Forget about Polto, can't you? Forget the note. In 11 minutes, the man I love is going to the electric chair. He's a nice kid. Even if he was working for crooks, he enjoyed life. We loved each other.
I'm sorry for you, my dear, but I can't let my personal feelings allow me to turn loose a man who should pay for his crime. I've always felt there was a place for sentiment in law enforcement, but it isn't right or just to let any man get away with murder.
Eddie didn't murder anyone, you fool. Can't you see what's happened?
Maybe you better go outside, Madeline. You're getting hysterical. I'm going to have to work fast to get Eddie off now.
You get him off? You never wanted to get him off. You never tried to get him off.
Take her outside, Comstock, will you? She's cracking up.
I guess you better, Comstock, at that.
Pardon me, gents. I come here with the little lady, and she ain't leaving till she's darn good and ready.
But you... You have the audacity to pull a gun in my office?
Kind of funny, ain't it? Me, who always shied away from force, who got into the dip racket because it didn't have no violence. Me, holding a gun on the governor of the state.
Why, I'll have you thrown into jail for this, sir.
Okay, suit yourself. I've been in jail before, but the little lady's going to stay here as long as she likes.
Thanks, Peggy. Now, I want you to listen to me, Governor. Rogan sold Eddie Banks out. He put on a great show of trying to help him when all the time he was trying to hurt him. Rogan wants Eddie to go to the chair. Porter paid him to want that. The one really important point of evidence that could have helped Eddie, Rogan held out. He's given Eddie wrong advice right from the start.
I'm leaving, Burris. It's 12:05, and this thing looks like a hot story to me. Boy, I can just see it. Gun-crazy pickpocket holds governor at bay while killer fries.
Stop it! Don't talk like that!
You ain't leaving, bud. Not yet.
If I had an opportunity to kill Poto, so did Rogan. Before he came up to your office tonight.
Well, you're out of your head. And you're wasting time that I could be spending in pleading Eddie's case. There's only 3 minutes to go.
Governor, you've just got to see it. Rogan's been tied up to Poto. He deliberately put Eddie where he is. Why, working for Poto, Rogan could have even been the one who killed Bickford. Oh, Governor, there's only 2.5 minutes. For the love of heaven, grab that phone. Grab it. Call the warden right now. I'll dial the number. You've got to do it. You've got to. If you just hold off a few minutes, I'll prove to you that it's Rogan who should be there and not Eddie.
Put that phone down, Miss Martin. I'll make my own telephone calls without any help from you. And this show of hysteria isn't helping the case at all. I have to consider facts, not the emotional outburst.
You have to consider yourself, too, don't you? You're going to have to live with yourself after Eddie Banks is dead. After I've proved that Rogan framed him into the electric chair for a rotten, crooked gangster. And you're going to be guiltier of murder than Eddie ever was. How's it going to feel when you discover you killed an innocent man?
I'm sorry, my dear. I'd like to help you, honestly. I would.
1 minute, only 1 minute, Eddie will be strapped in. They'll turn up. Oh, do something. Don't sit there like a fool. He's a human being, and it's a human life you're playing with.
You're not changing your mind, Governor?
I've delayed this thing twice, Rogan. It looked bad.
Oh, what difference does it make how it looks? Listen, Rogan. You were at the Club Mirador the night of the murder. You saw the fight when Eddie slipped the money into Bickford's pocket. You'd have been the one person there who realized what was happening. You...
Wait. You say he was at the Club Mirador? Why hasn't anything been said about that before?
There was. I mentioned it to Rogan right at the start, and he said neither Eddie or I should ever say anything about it, or folks on the jury would think Eddie had a lawyer planted in the club to establish an alibi for himself. Oh, you grab that phone, grab it. Only 10 seconds. Try, you might make it.
I'm afraid it's too late, Miss
Martin.
Oh, no. I couldn't possibly get through in time.
Oh,
you're
no.
The lady out now, Fred, and don't let this pickpocket get out of the building. I'm going to attend to him.
Okay, Governor. You know, I ain't so sure.
I didn't ask you to be sure of anything, Comstock. Get them out of here. I want to talk to Rogan.
Okay.
You killed a man. You're a murderer. You killed...
Well? In the name of the state, I'm going to have to put you under arrest, Rogan.
Yeah? On that perjury business?
No. You killed Bickford.
You don't say.
You killed him for $5,000, I suppose, and Poto finally stumbled at what had happened when he saw how you handled Eddie's bank defense. So you had to kill him, too. You left that note about Eddie Banks to throw anybody off the scent.
You have a good imagination, Governor.
I don't think I have, Rogan. I'm quite unimaginative as a rule. So unimaginative that I'm going to have a handwriting expert compare that note with your handwriting. Going to have fingerprint experts look for your fingerprints. Going to trace the knife they found in Poto's heart. And I imagine I'll find some very interesting things.
Yes, I imagine you will, Governor. It's too bad you won't be able to do anything about them, isn't it?
Just what do you mean?
You try to do anything to me for killing Poto and I'll ruin your whole career. You haven't thought this out yet, Governor. But you're going to see a great light. You don't dare touch me on Polko's murder, because the minute you do, I confess Bickford's murder.
So, you really did kill Bickford?
Sure, I killed him. And that's why you can't touch me for killing Polto.
Just how do you figure that one?
The minute I confess I killed Bickford, you're so washed up in politics, you're a bum.
Yes?
Sure. The girl gave you all the dope straight. And you let an innocent man go to the electric chair. How does that make you look to the public, Governor? You not only look like a sap, but a vicious sap, a dangerous one. You can't touch me without smashing your whole career.
You've been very smart about this, Rogan. Or maybe sharp is the word. You played every angle, didn't you?
I always play every angle, Governor.
There's only one little thing you overlook.
What? This. Revolver. I don't get it. You wouldn't have the nerve.
I'm putting you under arrest for the murders of Bickford and Polto. Just a minute. Hello. Warden, cancel everything. You can turn Eddie Banks loose now. Thank you.
I don't get it. He was to be electrocuted at 1 minute past midnight.
I know.
Well, it's 8 minutes past now.
8 minutes past midnight by my clock, Rogan.
What?
I set my clock 15 minutes ahead tonight, Rogan. 15 minutes past. I had my doubts about the boy's guilt, even in spite of your bad pleading of his case.
Trick you. You tricked me.
Yes.
You...
Yes, I tricked you. You know, it's going to be fun letting that reporter Comstock know about this. He said I was stuffy. I don't think I'm stuffy at all. Do you, Logan?
Mystery House, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 7th, 1945 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.